is that when cells get that notch signal early on, they get it early on, they remember that many generations later. Cells divide and divide and divide, and the great grand descendants of a cell that has gotten that signaling information remembers that it got it, and it remains locked because of the information it got from its ancestors. If we can prevent that lockdown, if we prevent that signal, then cells many generations can, they don't remember that they got that lock, and they can switch many generations later. So that's the fundamental conclusions of our story. If we need part of our heart replaced, or if we need part of a kidney replaced, or a whole kidney, we now have a control over the switches that allow us to switch cells that are growing in the lab over to, for example, becoming a heart or becoming a kidney. I'm not saying that we ourselves made heart or kidney cells, but we have learned more about the fundamental switches that lock cells into not being heart or not being kidney, and then we can break those locks and therefore direct cells into becoming heart or kidney.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
My mother's mother's personal library had over 1,000 books, and her bedroom closet was cluttered with guns. And she helped raise her first grandson with a switch and a message. Her patience was not to be tested. A nurse who taught 2 languages and expected her progeny to excel. Quick to tell you, tough titty, raised 4 children by moving back and forth between southern and northern cities, told my mother, no way. Yeah, you and that baby can move in, but ain't no grown man moving into my house on no day. No pity. The bosom was warm, but the gangster was gritty. Pretty girl, piano player, singer, matriarch, cared for her parents for years while secretly dying of cancer, but still never let anything tear her family apart. My grandmother, Eula English, was my heart. My mother's mother's mother was a school teacher. A black woman with a college degree in the 1930s and 40s, long before these underachievers came up with excuses, would do whatever she had to do to make sure her descendants didn't end up shiftless and useless, use candy to motivate the children in the neighborhood to study the Bible because she believed that that was where the truth is. Ruthless when disrespected, connected nouns and verbs to put your self-concept in check, could be expected to rip your ego apart. Named after a city in Texas, my great-grandmother, Galveston McNeil, was my heart. My mother's 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 mother was a rider, type to show up inside her son-in-law's living room and just take over, tell him, look, I'm like a general and I raised my daughter to only roll with soldiers. Born in 1882, transcended 3 years before my start, famous for lighting cigarettes and putting men in their places, my great-great-grandmother Sarah Gist was my heart. My father's mother was a social worker, a black woman with a college degree in the 1950s who bought a house for her siblings and her parents and raised her children to either get educated or get busy. Told her husband, look, if I'm going on a vacation, you could best believe my grandson is always coming with me. Comprehended. Told my mother, if anybody steps to my grandchild and gets knocked out, never punish him if he gets suspended. Just ask him how it'd start. My paternal grandmother, Flora Acey, was my heart. And my mother is a black nationalist with a master's degree in mathematics who's been programming computers since before they had keyboards. I'm talking punch cards. And didn't care about my rough housing in the street, but if I ever disrespected her, I got punched hard. And then hit with switches till I blacked out like them computer glitches. And if I came home with B's, she would make me study more to ensure I get the picture. Like tons of megapixels, she developed me to be sharp. Still my favorite person in the world, my mother, Jacqueline Acey, is my heart. I'm a father to my son, and I've been one since the beginning. But every advantage I've ever given him has been the product of 5 women.
Now, go find the others.com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.
Walking horse of the Rainmakers. My buddy Jeff Porter and I will be joining our good friend Danny Cox and the legendary Brewer and Shipley for a KKFI benefit concert on Saturday, October 12th at Community Christian Church, 4601 Main, right here in Kansas City. There will be a meet and greet dinner at 6 p.m., followed by the 7 p.m. concert. Tickets and further details available at kkfi.org.
Yeah. And you are
listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Michael T. Justice, still here, 4 o'clock hour, sending out a distress call, looking for you to give me a call, 816-931-5534. Let us know what's on your mind. Covered a lot of stuff in the suicide. We had a nice, healthy conversation going on leading into the suicide. Jake is here with me still. If I can correctly get him potted up and everything, we'll say hello. Good morning, Jake.
Hello. Good morning, Jake.
All right. He's there. All that's missing is you. So once again, pick it up and dial at 816-931-5534. 931-KKFI. Jake, how are you, sir?
Not doing too bad.
Is it, you were talking a little bit about setting up the suicide. What was your overall feel for this one this week? Did you feel like you stuck it? I mean, do you feel that way? You know what I mean? Do you feel sometimes like, bam, that was the one?
Right. Yeah. A lot of times I do, because I make each one of those clips individually. I don't string it together, you know, chronologically. I've got 50 to 75 separate clips, you know, in a folder, and I kind of shuffle them like a deck of cards, put music right on one side, news on the other, you know, splash some comedy and poetry around in there, and, you know, shuffle them up. So there's a point in time where I've heard it for the first time.
Right.
And I generally try to just amuse myself. And if I like it, you know, maybe somebody else will, but yeah, I like that one.
So is that how you come to have these, the different, I mean, so sometimes you'll have like poets and songs or whatever that make more than one appearance in the suicides and even clips. So if you say get that clip or that song, do you just kind of work with that one throughout? Like that is the one that you splice, or
no, there's
like just take that chunk.
The original suicides were just huge chunks of information. And a lot of the clips that get recycled are seventh or eighth generation. Sometimes I'll clip out a word or pot it up or, you know, repeat it,
right,
slow it down, you know, take huge speeches and boil them down to sentences.
Now, how do you feel? Do you feel like you would be intellectually plagiarized if I made my own suicide, if I came in here and like...
No, I didn't invent, you know, audio editing.
Right, right.
A lot of people do the same type of thing in a way shorter format.
Right.
My stuff kind of is a little different because we get to play with the long, you know, in between station IDs, generally right at an hour.
Right, which is cool. I mean,
Right, and also when I do it that way, I look for patterns, and it's, you know, sometimes it's self-assembling. Like the shuffling appears to be random, but if you see the patterns in the news, you know, it's they kind of fit together anyway.
Right, right. Now, I ended up in some conversations the last week or so about something that you... And I say conversations because there's more than one and at different times and unrelated about some of the stuff that you... I think it was last week or maybe the week... Well, it had to be last week or maybe a couple of weeks before that. But where we were talking and you pointed out something, you made a statement that, you know, there's certain suppositions that are... that we can just expect, or that we, you know, that we just know. And one of them you mentioned was that the earth is expanding.
Right.
But that's not commonly held. I mean, it's not universally held anyway.
No, that's a long-winded topic. But climate change and all its various arguments, I think, are subcomponents to the precursors of an expansion geologically, which is recorded throughout history. And if you shrink the size of the globe down like 33%,
you can see it.
All the land masses fit together perfectly.
Right.
Like most people are aware of South America and Africa fitting together if the ocean wasn't in between them. But the rest of the world fits together just like that.
Right.
So the Earth is expanding. And yeah, in that context, whether it's, you know, global warming, geoengineering, time shifts, time speeding up, time slowing down, planetary and solar bodies acting unnormal, I think a lot of that, does tie together with the expanding Earth.
And are you familiar with Dr. Sheldrake, I think was his name?
Rupert?
Is that his first name?
Right, Rupert Sheldrake.
Okay, yeah, because there was one of the conversations that I ended up getting into is because I was listening with someone I can't remember which show it was right now that was on KKFI during the 5 o'clock hour. It may have been New Dimensions where they were talking or they held a talk, played a talk by the Sheldrake. I guess he's got a book out recently that challenges not only the expanding Earth or not having the expanding Earth, but he challenges several things. And you just mentioned another one of those assumptions is that the constancy of time and itself, of gravity.
Right. The dinosaur extinction has more to do with the density of oxygen and the pull of gravity on a smaller planet. All of the equations of physics fly out the window because it's not, time is not a constant. If the Earth is 33% smaller, it rotating on its axis, I mean, what does 24 hours even mean at that point?
Right.
So, yeah, that's the, the Mayans got the raw end of the deal because the planet didn't explode, but their calendrical system was these nested cycles. The first and the smallest being that of human gestation, the 9 months, give or take, of pregnancy, all the way to the great cosmic year. where these things change on a regular basis. And if you consider, sacred geometry and the Fibonacci sequence and stuff, you can calculate time, but it's not going to be a constant. There's more layers to the calculus. So when people argue about when the pyramids were built, if the Atlantic Ocean isn't there or it's 33% smaller, then getting from Chichen Itza to Cairo isn't the undertaking once thought. But it wasn't X amount of years ago or X amount of days ago because those were completely different variables.
Similarly, a worldwide flood would be less...
Right.
Impossible, right? I mean, I'm just...
Well...
I'm not trying to interject that into it, but...
Right. And then that also gets into the crazy parts, of the solar system that are rarely talked about. Not only is the Earth expanding, the helical motion of the... the sun's not just stationary in space, it's moving too. But, even where things like water come from. What's the sun give off mostly? In elemental form, hydrogen.
Right.
And charged particles. And there's a whole lot of oxygen around Earth. And so what happens when you mix hydrogen and oxygen and charged particles?
Get water, right?
Right. The sun being the source of the heat, like the radiant heat, if you go up into the atmosphere, does the temperature get hotter or colder?
Okay, I'm with you. Colder.
Okay, and in the outer space?
Coldest of all.
Okay, so does the heat disappear and then reappear? The energy for the chemical equation that is heat on Earth involves the rotating body, the core, centrifugal force, inertia and drag. We're flying through space, and there is space weather, and a lot of these elemental particles, like hydrogen and charged particles from the sun, collide into a planet. It creates friction and heat and condensation and water. And so great worldwide floods would correlate specifically with either a massive solar storm, so to speak, like a X-class flare times a billion, or something like this size of the planet changing.
Wow.
You know, once it's heavier, its orbit around the sun
would change,
backs off a little bit. Yeah, so when you understand the multi-dimensional motion of the universe, you know, we're not just spinning around a stationary object. The whole thing's in motion.
But even that presupposes a marking of a time that could still be constant, right? So, like, the Earth could spin faster, but still time would be time as a constant thing. Like, right. We measure it in it takes for the Earth to revolve, do one resolution.
Right. You can still measure it as a function of a smaller octave. You don't just, like, 1 and 2 make 3, and 2 and 3 make 5, and 3 and 5 make 8. You know, and on to however far you want to go, that's the Fibonacci sequence. You know, your pinky plus your palm is the length of your forearm, and your hand plus your forearm is the length of your whole arm. Broccoli, seashells, you know, the patterning and the repatterning of, you know, matter itself. I'm quoting somebody who said this. This didn't come from me. But there are only two things in the universe. There's matter and patterns. When you get to the etymology of mater and pater, or the mother and father, of all things are matter and patterns. So we have the periodic table of elements that compose everything from Mars to this microphone to that water bottle. You know, you have the matter and then the patterning of that matter in all its various and sundry forms and dimensions and colors and sounds and shapes. But you can measure time if you understand, you know, the octave of how big the planet grows, for example. You know, because it's not a slow, steady crawl, you know, uniform the whole way.
There are spurts.
Yeah. Peaks and valleys in the graph, for sure.
And the problem, because I hear you talking about this, and I'm, well, basically entertaining the thought and thinking about what you're saying, and what this Dr. Sheldrake was talking about was how science has gotten, not gotten it wrong, but how they have doctrinized or become doctrinaire in their beliefs about, and that's what it is. It's belief, right? You believe that time is constant. You believe that there is this
gravity,
you know,
is constant.
Yeah, and you know, and he really got down into it and broke it down and was like, okay, but these are some beliefs that we just accept. And he was talking at some point in his talk. And it was really interesting because what really caught my attention about it, and it was, I'm going to not do it very much justice in trying to recapture his conversation, but he was talking about, you know, that all over the world, people have these different independent, you know, ongoing experiments and or recording of certain data, right? So, like, this is how they talk about global warming and stuff. Is they go like, well, we can go back and see a daily temperature recorded because they have done so in Germany in this town for the last 100 years, but this other place for 200 years they've kept a record. So you can start to see some things. And he was talking about how experiments that studied the speed of light? Yeah, the speed of light. He was talking about the constancy of the speed of light. Right. He's like, the experiments done all over the world showed a variation on the speed of light, but independently, these different experiments made the assumption that their experiments were wrong because they didn't come out with the right speed of light.
Right.
And so they just adjusted it. And when he examined these adjustments, he found that they all had made very close to the same adjustment, which would mean that all of their experiments were wrong to the same degree and in the same direction, as opposed to the speed of light had changed, and therefore their experiments yielded a different result than they had expected. But because they were doctrinaire, they just said, hey, obviously my experiment is wrong, because I didn't come out with the right answer.
They prove we don't know everything yet.
Right.
Just proved.
And that was his biggest point. That was the underlying point in his talk, was that we don't know everything, and that we don't, when we, and this is true, like, in our metaphysical, political, in all of life, right? If you assume that you know it and you don't, then you are off. And if you assume you know it, then you quit looking for the answer, or for a different answer, or for the change. And so you ignore it, or you know, you get into this whole Plato's allegory of the cave kind of situation, where people who have been, you know, chained to a viewpoint, if you express to them a different viewpoint or a different explanation / interpretation of their own viewpoints, then they get violent about it. You know what I mean? You're crazy. And it becomes easier just to, like, put your head down and not believe that you saw
sanity
the sun.
Yeah, sanity and sanitize are related. I mean, you almost have to be brainwashed.
See, you freak me out when you do this etymological stuff.
It's all,
because I dig where you're coming from.
And they, you know, they plan the words out ahead of time.
That's where you lose me, is like when there was some guy coming up with the word sanitize.
Insanity?
You think it was like, we got to clean this up, and they meant cleaning up the way people think?
Yeah, well, this would take a whole presentation, and I don't have any of the relevant footnotes.
But see, here you go. You presuppose this not just a new world. I mean, it's got to be massive to have controlled
in the context,
the very language that far back.
There's a whole line of thinking, and my next point will be in the subcontext of the possibility that language itself was what broke the telepathy and the unity of, you know, how like herds of buffalo or ant colonies or, you know, swarms of bees, geese flying, they all figure out what to do.
Right.
You know what I mean? Without talking about it, planning it out, making a diagram.
Because they have a connection on some level. There is some way they are making communication to them, to within themselves.
There's no funding legislation for the ant colony. So the magic trick itself may be that language and the written word are what shattered the mind in the first place, that made us schizophrenic. The original Hebrew is thought to be a graphical form of the motion that would convey the thought you were trying to express to somebody. So, like, you know, when a dog's haunches raise up and that hair stands up and their teeth kind of show, that's a pretty specific piece of information that dog's conveying. But humans had a different, you know, dance or rhythm to communication with other humans at some point. And the original glyphs of Hebrew are the motions of, you know, the alpha through zeta. Or what, I mean, those are obviously Greek and not Hebrew letters. The aleph, however they start their A to Z. But yeah, the original priest class, what they did to trick people into this fractured mentality all the way up to the 21st century system of mind control, that speech and written word itself are what broke our telepathic nature anyway. Because, you know, words are a form of telepathy, but it's a subset. I'm not physically putting anything in your brain when I say blue elephant, but those sounds, I make that noise, you hear it, so it is telepathic. You know, I'm controlling somebody's thoughts with my thoughts, but it's secondhand telepathic. There's the beginning of the media. You know, you want language itself is in between. It's the middle ground between, my thoughts and your thoughts.
But the thing about communication at that level, like that definition of telepathic, is that any kind of language or written or spoken is all about losing part of the actual
the intention
image,
right? You can,
or the message.
Terrence McKenna says it all the time in a lot of his speeches, and I don't know if he's quoting somebody or just being himself, but that man, you made me forget now.
Well, it's all good. It's all good. We've got a call, so I'll pull that up and see if that will bring us back to it or take us even further afield. KKFI, you're on the air. What's your name? What part of town are you calling from?
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is Fanny Brown, the God Sister Soul, James' little sister, and I'm calling from Joliet, Illinois.
Well, welcome, and you are listening then on the World Wide Web, KKFI.org.
Yes, sir. Groovy Grant gave me this number.
Excellent.
And he's been playing my song, Stop the Killing and Pull Your Pants Up.
Well, I certainly appreciate that sentiment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, so did you want to join the conversation, or was that it?
I was just calling in, and I wanted to know what all you all were talking about this morning since I'm up this early.
All right. Well, we are trying to metaphysically solve the questions of the universe, in a manner of speaking. What was the name of your song?
Stop the Killing. You can't replace the living. And Pull Up Your Pants. You sagging down. And the new one is, I'll pull up your pants and do the James Brown dance.
Well, unfortunately, it's not in our PAL system, so I can't play it, but
I'll bring it back to you, although, if you give me the address before you hang up, I'll make sure I send it back to you all.
All right, well, I actually don't know the address.
Yeah, I'm That's okay, I'll get it from Groovy Grant again, but
yeah,
are you
definitely
all trying to solve the problems of the universe?
Right.
Exactly, what are you trying to say when you say that? Because my situation was just trying to put some knowledge and wisdom back in our four generations that we lost of children, of morals, respect, love, caring, knowledge of God that created us all, and then knowledge of self.
Well, Jake, that's slightly different than what you were going at, right?
Well, we all have our take on it.
Well, that's the universal problem, I think, is that human beings have lost love for themselves, respect for themselves, respect for the Creator that made us all, and we really don't know ourselves. We're so busy being in love with a universal world of material garbage that all rot or all melt or all deteriorate and goes back to nothing, till we forgot about the spiritual and physical body that the Creator has given us and the laws that He's given us and His commandments of how we should live, treat each other, be toward each other, and help each other. And my holy name is Karima Muhammad, so you all know.
Okay. Well, good deal. Well, I'm not sure how that fits into it. I mean, my thought is I immediately hear, and maybe this is just something that I try to do, is try to marry people's thoughts to kind of see if I can get to an agreement in viewpoint, knowing that it won't jibe 100%. But when you talk about some of the stuff you were just talking about, all the things deteriorate and whatnot, I was kind of thinking about Jake's viewpoint, kind of putting that together. Do you see that coming together with you at all, Jake? Up to the point where it's like back to nothing because
don't think it's back to nothing. I think it's back to everything.
Right. You would put that. But, you know, in a circle, that far point is both the left and the right, or the nothing and the everything. You know what I mean?
Because the material world will disintegrate back into everything, but so will, you know, our bodies and our spirits, because it's the matter and the patterns. The energy goes somewhere, and it goes back into the energy pile and redisperses some other piece of energy to arrange the matter in another form.
Now, the idea of a directed creator, you know, God or Jehovah or Allah or whatever, you don't quite get on that level.
I think of creation as a force, like if you combine... Like, gravity is essential to, you know, this dimension, obviously. But it's pretty undefinable. You know what I mean? I think of creation as a... There's positive and negative charges in the, you know, fundamentals of life all the way through the philosophical, you know, war of good and evil.
Yes, that's true.
So, but, and those both imply direction, positive and negative, or a lot of people say positive and not charged because it's not necessarily negative. So whatever's directing that positive and negative is what I would consider God. It's some conscious creation. I don't know. You know, I'm not giving up on the idea this all may be a simulation anyway.
I wouldn't say assimilation. I would say that we are real, that the spirits come from the Creator that made them all.
Right.
And that we are products from the earth. And everything that we see, have, do, and think of that comes into materialistic things, man make them, but God put the thought in the brain in order for you to think how to function and get them.
Exactly. And God also put the plutonium and uranium in the ground that we explode on each other. And God also put the heat and the fire we use to burn each other with. You know, God came before the devil, so logically that
and would made him.
Well, right. So, yeah, whatever.
He made a positive and a negative.
Exactly. That's what I consider.
Or a yin and a yang, or whatever you might want to call it, because through opposition and trials come strength and courage and love and character. And all of that has to come, but if you never experience a negative, you won't know the good in the positive.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, I can definitely... See, yeah, I mean, I guess...
I don't anthropomorphize or worship God in any way. I think of it as that still center in between positive and negative that's directing one in the opposite direction of the other.
Whatever. Where I serve it, I praise it. I thank him for letting me live every day to be able to praise him another day. I thank him for people, the good and the bad, because the bad were trials that'll make me stronger, make me hurt and go through pain. But he always sends me a brighter lining on the end of the result. So I bear witness that there is a God and a creator. And if it wasn't one, then we couldn't be here.
Exactly.
If we're made in his image and his likeness, do we look like when we look in the mirror?
That's the thing, and when you want to talk about historical scripture, the word image there, made in God's image, it's more like imagination, because image is in the word imagination, and it's a, in my best estimation, a mistranslation, that we're created in the imagination of the Creator.
But to look exactly like him.
What does that mean, to look exactly like him? Because I'm looking at
to have feet, well, to walk like he walked, like Adam said he heard him walking in the garden, like Abraham said he seen him and the angels coming to his door, to have feet Abraham told him to sit, which means he had legs and a behind to sit on, and let him wash his feet. He told Sarah and his servant to kill the fatted calf and make God some food. So he had a mouth, hands, a face. Adam said he talked to him. Moses said he talked to him face to face, like a man talked to his friend. So God is a spirit like we are, but he can come in the flesh and in the being of any man when we have thoughts. And we think of things. He's putting things in our mind, or we hear things, and some say, go this way, don't go that way, stop right here. He is sending transmissions to us, most times through his angels, but the message is getting to us, thoughts from the Creator to give us a better way, a better sense.
But then how do you determine whether the thoughts from the Creator are the ones telling you to kill that guy or the ones telling you to love that guy?
Well, he, in that sense, because I haven't been told to kill no guy, I've got mad enough now.
Well, but that's what I'm saying, though. You're saying that the thoughts,
help me.
But cuss that guy out.
I never just said that he told me to kill nobody.
Okay. Okay,
but
just to cuss somebody out.
Everything is here and everything do exist. And if you can't pray, I think from my point of view, since you asked, let me try to answer to the best of my ability. If we can pray and ask him to hold on to us and give us a chance to get it together and try to calm ourselves down, sometimes we can come away from it. If we're hurt real bad, or somebody has hurt us or misused us, and we can't get control quickly, that's what's called temporary insanity, which is where any man and any woman can go at any time if they're pushed to their limit, to where their mind and heart can't take no more. So that's the best way I know to explain it to you.
All right. Well, I don't know. Did you have anything else there, Jake, on that?
Amen.
Okay. All right. Well, I do thank you very much, caller. And make sure you pass that on to Groovy Grant. Ask him to get that put in PAL, and we'll be able to play your music as well as part of the show.
Yes, sir. Thank you all for having me. May God bless everyone that hears this and bless us all to come into the enlightenment of his understanding to have peace on this earth. We'll see you here. Have a good day, everyone.
All right. Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum.
All righty.
And
it is clear to me, anyway, that the 4 o'clock hour is one in which we get metaphysical or spiritual, depending on how you want to look at it. Because it seems like week after week, that is where the conversation goes during this hour, is to that whole. Area, and it's hard for me at times because it just gets worn. The topic or the subject gets worn, especially when there are certain assumptions that are made that preclude the discussion going further on.
Yeah, that's where I skip the assumptions. So, like, I think in my best estimate, creation is provable with things like the Fibonacci sequence and the golden ratio and the fact that apparently, you know, for life to even exist on this planet, like an infinitesimal amount of things had to go exactly right. You know, that's beyond all probability not an accident. You know, if we were any closer or any farther away from the sun, or you know, if the sun was any closer, any farther away from its, everything had to land just right after the Big Bang for even this to be possible.
Right.
You know, and now they're saying that, you know, microscopic or macroscopic life is possible on other planets and Goldilocks planets and things like that. I personally think that that's what planets are for, is to harbor life in as many varieties and forms as possible. So in some stage of life, prehistoric, modern, or, you know, crypto-terrestrials, I think every planet has some kind of life on it, remnant or about to be, building blocks for, let's say.
Right. Was that part of the suicide, the thing about the rock that eats
something?
Like... Dude, that was an episode of Star Trek, right?
Right. The song, see, and that's where the patterns come in. So there's this thing floating around Facebook this week where these little kids from like age 5 to 13 or something have this 8 or 10 piece ensemble, and they play the Tool song called 46 and 2, which is all about the DNA structure. And there's a whole, you could do a whole radio show on the, you know, the symbolism of 46 and 2. So I was, you know, really like this because these little kids are wildly talented. I love that song and they nailed it as a cover. So, you know, as I'm filtering through the news this week, there's all kinds of bizarre, you know, DNA stuff. So, you know, when you think about 46 and 2 and, you know, the patterning of the DNA helix for even human beings to be alive, you know, what, so, you know, now there's plants. They, so one of the clips was it's called the sheep eating plant. It's got these giant pod looking fruit like cactus things on this plant.
The sheep go into it,
if they
caught.
Bump into it, it paralyzes them. And so they just, like, they literally can't move. And then, you know, hopefully the wind blows or they try and struggle or something and they get jabbed again, so they eventually just starve to death and then turn into fertilizer. So you've got plants that eat animals. They found,
wow,
I think it was in Chile or Argentina, they found what they thought was a rock. It was completely immobile, hard like a rock. Somehow they broke it open and this thing has blood and guts in it. And then it just sucks in water and feeds off of, you know, detritus or dead plankton or, you know,
right,
rotting protein on the bottom of the
so then is it similar to like the coral reef is alive, but it's
that's the thing about 46 and 2. So in that DNA pattern, it's a code, you know, there's four elements that repeat, and what, depending on what pattern you put them in, it could be a starfish or a rock that has guts, or a plant that eats animals, or animals that eat plants, or animals that eat animals. This whole wild biodiversity of everything imaginable, whales, land whales, elephants, pterodactyls, I mean, this all comes from this 46 and 2 patterning.
Huh. That's pretty wild. That's, okay, I'm sorry, I was trying to do too much here altogether, so I'll let you have this conversation. KK5, what's your name? Or what's your name? What part of town are you calling from?
It's Big Dog. What's wrong, guys?
Big Dog, what's going on, sir?
Not much. I'm kind of in a flux from our conversation, Michael T, that we had last week.
Okay.
And then the recent caller that just called in. I'm kind of at a thoughts or an impasse in which I'm about ready to say something that's going to sound like I'm putting you down or being argumentative or whatever, okay?
Okay.
But the point is this particular person, last week I called in and you were like, went off on me about, you can't reach people over the radio with Jesus, this, that, and the other. You're Jesus this and Jesus that.
Well, because I was asking the question of what are we going to do, and that's that.
Well, that's when you went off on the tangent of Jesus this and Jesus that. But you didn't do the same thing to this person that called in tonight. And I sit back and I'm wondering, what, Michael T. don't like me?
Well, I did challenge her.
I can't call in and talk about the creator, the way,
but excuse
in
me,
the same manner, in the same manner this person
excuse
did, but
me.
I get a different.
Excuse me, but I think I did indeed challenge her assumptions and what she was saying.
Okay,
maybe
would you
not
agree
as,
that there is a certain mannerism involved that would
oh,
be
sure,
more along
I'm
the
sure.
lines of a maybe a decent conversation instead
I'm sure
of just,
familiarity
the way,
breeds.
The way you threw it at me, it was like. And it made me think all week long, what the heck have I really done to this guy who claims to have knowledge or claims to have faith in the same creator that I'm talking about, who just got done saying that at this time of hour we get these religious calls, well, you didn't say religious, But
no, that's exactly what I meant. I said at this time of the hour, it seems like that is the type of individual that is ready to talk, it seems like, because it's not just you, it's others that call up, and that's kind of where the conversation sometimes goes. Now, I think I did indeed challenge her assumptions probably differently than I do yours, because I've been talking to you for over 10 years. And in that over 10 years, there's a certain, like I said, and almost tongue in cheek here, the familiarity breeds contempt. I kind of know what you're going to say, kind of like you kind of know what I'm going to say. And so sometimes we tend to pre-argue, and it can get elevated and ramped. You know, we can skip over some of the steps to get to the difference. So that's where I was coming from. Not only that, I was also in a particular place of hurt last week, not from you, but because of the very thing that I was asking in frustration about, and still have that frustration. What are we going to do to change these people? Because we had the funeral Saturday, and it was you know, disheartening to sit in a church and hear, you know, the minister saying things a lot of the religious talk is talk, because, you know, I understand what you're saying, because I understand the statement, right, is if you don't accept Jesus and if you don't do this, then you're going to hell. But then you sit there in a funeral service and you say, you know, this child is in a better place. Well, why is that child in a better place? I remember my mother's funeral and the guy saying, and I remember because at that point I was like a young person and freshly strongly faith or whatever, I don't know what you want to call it, but I remember thinking, and I've always thought, you know, you didn't know her, one, and for you to sit here and talk about how she's in a better place and that you didn't know what her beliefs were, and in fact her beliefs were not what you were saying that they need to be on any other day. And in fact, at the end of a funeral service, this is often done, it, you know, there's this whole time frame where they're saying that this person is in a better place, but you know that person, and you know that they weren't like a church-going Christian or even a professing believer, but this person is saying that this minister is saying that they're going to be in heaven and they're going to be waiting for you, and then they turn right around within the same moment and say, if you don't make it right, you're not going to heaven. And you got to learn from this, and you got to get right. But you just said that person's in heaven, and I know that they didn't do the things that you say need to be done. So now you know what I'm saying? It ends up being this thing that
I get you.
That rings hollow. It rings hollow, so it doesn't comfort me.
Pardon me?
It rings hollow, so it doesn't comfort me.
I understand that. I and that's the generic.
So I wasn't lashing out at you for not comforting me, but I was frustrated with that whole view, because whenever there's death, that's the conversation that gets had, and then you're the one that was foolish enough to call me and want to talk about it.
I was kind of your fall guy for that night, huh?
Right.
Yeah,
no, absolutely. I mean, because like I said, my mother died in 1990, and I remember having that feeling and have had it ever since. It's like my mother did not go to church. My mother did not, you know, my mother, like, talked to me and not taught me, but talked to me about, you know, transcendental meditation and yoga and self-hypnosis and all this other stuff. And she never talked to me about the Trinity and the Holy Spirit and all of that kind of thing. So it becomes hard for me to hear someone professing to be a Christian minister say that she's in heaven and that the only way you can get to heaven is through Jesus, and therefore we better get straight while we've got a chance, because this person being dead shows you that your life is not 100% guaranteed. I mean, you can die at 23. That's how old my 22, actually. She died 5 days before her birthday. You know, so here's someone who's 22, gunned down, and you go, well, how do you make that statement? I'm not wishing hell upon anybody. I'm just saying, if there's a cost to getting into heaven, then let's stop going to funerals and telling everybody that the young gangbanger is in heaven. And she wasn't a gangbanger, but they do it at gangbanger funerals too. You know what I'm saying? You can't go to, you know, Woody Allen's funeral and then say, here's a guy that's in heaven, and then say, well, now if you have Wilt Chamberlain, right? Who like says, I've had sex with over 10,000 women, or whatever he said. And then you turn around and tell me that he's prancing around heaven? And that I better straighten up or I don't get to go? I'm like, no, dude, if that's what it takes to go, sign me up.
Apparently his heaven was here.
That's what I was thinking. It's like he was making his own little paradise.
He thought this was heaven. He was confused.
Yeah, he thought he... Well, I better not say that. He thought he was getting his 72 right here. I said I wasn't going to say it, and then I said it. So, whatever.
Well,
but
I mean,
but
just,
I hope I hope you will
seems,
accept my apology, big dog,
because
I thought
like I'm
about
whining
it.
Whining and moaning and crying about this. But
no,
it just kind of seemed a little off to me.
I hope you will accept my apology, big dog, because I thought about it too, and I felt like I did kind of snap at you. But I hope that I kind of put some light on it, that I wasn't snapping at you, but that whole thought process.
I got you, man. It's okay, and no problem. Apology accepted. I just seem kind of strange because normally you're not. Well, I guess sometimes you are, but
right.
Normally you're not that like grungy, if you want to call it, give it
no,
a word.
I would take that. I would accept that as a good explanation of how I was feeling.
So, but anyway, Jake, how you doing tonight, sir?
If I was any better, I'd be twins.
Oh my goodness.
So what do you think about the constancy?
I mean, if you're any better, you could be triplets.
Well, I don't want to push it.
So, Big Dog, what do you think about the constancy of gravity, time, the speed of light, those things that we were talking about? Because, and here's why I ask you, is because those questions of that reliability even get at
the
faith questions.
Yeah,
you know,
days.
God is God because he is the master of the day. But then if the day changes, but God never changed, you know what I mean? There become philosophical questions that need to be handled there. Okay. So I wonder how you feel about that whole...
Right. God is the pattern all these things are imitating. You know, because though none of those are constant, they are still a pattern. That's the premise behind the sacred geometry. Though it appears to be different, it's a fractal octave higher or lower, but it's still... So that's what I was saying. Even though time isn't constant, there's periods within the long view where it is close to a constant. But it will change at some point. Just like the Earth doesn't gradually expand, it's massive upheavals with long periods of stasis. I think we have a 364.637 day year for a long period of time. And then whether it's sun changes or space changes or Earth changes, and then now all of a sudden, because I think it's even kind of pretty provable in recorded history of a 360 day year when the, you know, path around the sun was more circular instead of, you know, helical.
Well, I was going to say, because that was part of the conversation that this Sheldrake was talking about, and I'll try and do this quickly, but what you just said, like they have added days, even do the leap year adjustment and thing like that, because we know that our math is not matching 100%, so we just randomly add in this, and he got to talking about this thing called dark matter. We go, here's our equation. It should fit. If it doesn't fit, we throw in this thing that makes it balance for us. And then we say there is something that is real, that is represented by this imaginary number or this dark matter that we can't tell you anything about it other than it has to exist or else our math doesn't work.
Well, and yeah, the visible light spectrum is a small fraction of the actual total light spectrum. I mean, from ultraviolet through the visible colors to infrared.
Right.
That's like a little piece of what just visible light itself. So there could be, you know, other dimensions residing in the same time space continuum that we're just not physically able to see, but are there the whole time.
Right.
Well, it's kind of interesting that, because this is something that I've been pondering for the last month about the grand cosmos of it all, and to truly trying to grasp a reality of how big my creator is. And I say my creator because, well, our view on that can be very different. But the point behind it is, I noticed that in the Old Testament, when I refer to time, there are 7 days in a week. We all can agree to that based on assumption that the biblical timing of creation, first day created, sixth, seventh, all the way up to the seventh day of creation. But we also notice that there's a time, or how do we judge our hours are based on the Earth's rotations around the sun, right? Because we've got light and dark. And the assumption behind that is how fast does the Earth actually rotate, Jake?
Exactly. It changes. When the tsunami hit Japan, it changed it. When there's, you know, lots of things change it all the time.
Right. But the flux of it, the tsunami may have changed it by what? A day? An hour? A minute?
Yeah,
a second?
Fractions of a second.
Yeah.
Right. So what we're looking at here is anomalies that happen on this Earth because of one reason. And again, it boils back to my belief, I want to make that very clear, is that the sin that was taken on by Adam and Eve destroyed everything that was perfect about this Earth. I would say the atmosphere, certain growths of vegetation and whatnot slowed down because the atmosphere was beginning to change because of the sin introduced into God's perfection. And he couldn't stand the sin because he is a holy God. So all the imperfections that we see, from tornadoes to floods, on a smaller scale, not on the grand scale of the great Noah's flood, okay? And I noticed that you guys also interjected in the idea of the one big continent, one big, I think it was called Pangaea.
We didn't get into that, but that is the name and the...
Yeah, where I differ with
at least
Pangaea,
in some beliefs.
Pangaea is like one solid landmass on one side and the rest of it's ocean, and the Earth is
ocean
the
on the other.
Side. Yeah,
right.
I'm talking about just a rock before the water got on it.
Okay.
I had to bring that
into the... Because we're getting very close to 5 o'clock here.
Yeah, we're there.
There's a lot more to talk about, but it seems to me that we... From tens, thousands, millions of years ago, time, blah, blah, blah. To me, time is more concerned to me based on seasons, not based on a 24-hour period, because to me that makes more sense because of the seasons that we go through agriculturally, which help feed us. Obviously, clothing and whatnot concerning... You know, it's too cold. This is cold.
Big Dog, I hate to interject, but I have to do so firm.
North to the south. Yeah, you could bring in all this stuff.
Big
and we
Dog,
could spend an hour talking about it.
We did. I hate to interject so firmly, sir, but I am in trouble if I don't do this right now. I have.